Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My pleasure as always. You're going to be glad you stayed with us because our good buddy Jim Copeland is with us. Jim is director for the Center of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research. And he is the guy who actually runs a show up there at the Manhattan Institute. And he's our good friend, been a member of our Brain Trust for a long time. Hey, Jim, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
It's always a pleasure. So we've got the president-elect who's doing some business. Jim, he's named a number of his future appointees. The most recent was to name Tim Geithner. At least it seems that that's what's happened. They broke that last week. Tim Geithner is Treasury Secretary. The markets seem to like that. I think that's probably, from what I can tell, that's probably a good choice. He's got, it looks like Senator Clinton is going to be his Secretary of State. Looks like Richardson's going to be his governor of New Mexico is going to be his commerce guy. A lot of interesting appointments, isn't he?
So far, I would say that the cabinet-level appointments make me cautiously optimistic. And what I mean by that is I have some policy differences with the incoming president, but he's picked, I think, serious people for the serious posts. And particularly, I think, Geithner is a very serious guy, the head of the New York Fed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
you don't get to be the head of the New York Fed if you don't have your cornflakes together. Because that's the big bank in the Fed.
And I think he is he's realized certainly on the economic front with all the instability in the economy, it's essential that he gets someone who's a serious player at Treasury. Who he's named for Attorney General, or at least who they've essentially talked about as the incoming guy, I don't know if it's formally been announced yet,
yeah,
is Eric Holder.
That's a little troubling, isn't it?
He's come under a fair amount of criticism from folks on the right who are perhaps a little more ideologically inclined than I am. I mean, he's left-wing on some issues for sure, but so is the incoming
president. He seems to have more baggage, though, than some of the other appointees that he's made.
Well, he's clearly... He's clearly got a little bit they're going after over the pardons and whatnot with President
right.
Clinton. He's clearly ideologically in sync with President Obama. What gives me some hope for that appointment, if that's what ultimately shakes down, is I think on the issue I focus on, and that's litigation reform, mm-hmm. we've got someone who at least seriously recognizes that there's a problem. We're not talking about a John Edwards type here. I was talking to my friend Philip Howard on Friday, who runs an organization, Common Good, that's committed to tort reform. He's a vice chairman at the Covington and Burling law firm and has written several books in this area. And Philip was pointing out to me that Eric Holder is actually someone who's been on his board. So he's somebody that I think at least recognizes there's a problem with excess litigation in the country. And
frivolous lawsuits cost small business owners billions of dollars every year.
Exactly. And I think in some areas like employment discrimination law, you're not going to see improvements in the incoming administration. I think that would be naive to assume that. I think on the campaign trail and in his voting record, Senator Obama has very much made himself clear that in things like the Lilly Ledbetter Act and some of the employment discrimination type lawsuits, he's for expanding liability, not contracting
mm-hmm.
it. So I want to make that clear, but I think at least what Eric Holder's suggested nomination indicates is that he's trying to put someone in there who's got some serious thinking and at least understands some of the problems with excess litigation. So I'm cautiously optimistic there as well.
The two things that have been the most interesting to me about these appointments is that none of them seem to be the kind of ideologue types that they're not off the rails on the left. None of them are, really. And that's one thing. And the other thing, which I'm very pleased about, and the other thing is how many of them have ties to the Clinton administration. Are you surprised at that, Jim?
Well, they all have ties to the Clinton administration, pretty much, except maybe Gaetner. But I'm a little bit surprised by it, but it's interesting. The day after the election, one of my good friends, who's a well-connected top Democrat in the New Jersey Senate, said, Jim, there's going to be a lot of people on the hard left that are going to be disappointed with this guy because he's going to be fairly centrist. And hopefully
that's
going to be the case.
Well, I think he knows if he's going to get this country out of the ditch, he's going to have to do that. Hold on to that thought, Jim Copeland. Quick breaks, folks. We'll be right back. 22. Little Robert Cray bringing us back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Hope you'll check those out and use them to your advantage. Jim Copeland is our guest. He's director of Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. And Jim, I want to talk about in a minute your thoughts on the future of the Supreme Court under President Obama. But before we do that, one of the things that I think is interesting about this Big Three consideration that's going on right now, the Big Three automakers bailout consideration, you know, the automakers are getting a lot of heat for their proposals and or lack of which, and they deserve that. But I didn't hear anybody complaining to the UAW last week about the job bank that GM is being forced to pay. These are 8,000-10,000 people. I'm not sure how many are still there, but thousands of people are being paid to do nothing by GM because the UAW won't let GM lay them off.
Right.
And so my question, Jim, I'd like to you is, how is President Obama's administration going to on the one hand try to force the Employee Free Choice Act, which is the card check bill where there's no secret ballot? How's he going to force that on the rest of us without asking the UAW to do their part to help out the Big Three? You got any ideas, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a good question, and I don't know that there's a simple answer there. I do think that, notwithstanding my cautious optimism on some of these appointments, I do think that the incoming President Obama is going to have to do something to scratch the backs of the unions. I mean, these are the folks that worked hard on his behalf.
Hundreds
and really
of millions of dollars.
What you see with the Big Three proposed bailout and help from the federal government, I mean, on the one hand, it's an extension of the sort of logic of the other bailouts. Those of us who are economically minded will say, well, they're not really the same thing. When you talk about the financial companies, you're worried about the systemic collapses that are going to potentially happen. You don't want people yanking their funds. You don't want banks to collapse, et cetera, but for various reasons, which is why we have FDIC insurance. Now, unfortunately, it's gone beyond that, and there was obviously some regulatory failure there. But with Big Three, what you're talking about there is really all about the unions, because there's not a principal justification why these companies really couldn't go through Chapter 11, reorganize like other businesses.
Yep.
Except, but what there is a big political reason, because what that would mean is busting some of these bad contracts with the unions, restructuring some of these pension obligations with the unions. The foreign car companies like Toyota that have plants in the United States are making their cars at a cost $2,000 cheaper than the Detroit companies, and that's precisely because they don't have these union obligations. It's not rocket science. It's not that the Japanese car mm-hmm. companies that are here or the German car companies that are here are run that much better in a operation sense.
And their people are being paid.
They have these union contracts, but there's going to have to be. There's a real tension there, but in this situation.
Well, and their people, the foreign companies making cars in the United States, their people are paid very well. Their benefits are very nice. They seem to be happy, or they could unionize if they tried. And so anyway, it's going to be interesting to see that, folks. But I'm telling you, Jim, I'm sure you're familiar with this job bank fiasco. And I mean, there are the last I heard, there were 8,000 to 10,000. UAW members sitting on their cans in one of these buildings doing nothing because the General Motors wanted to automate and lay these people off. And the UAW said no, and General Motors says, well, tell you what, go ahead, we'll just pay them, let's send them over there to that building. We're going to go ahead and put the technology in. General Motors was actually able to buy the technology, install it, and pay those workers not to do anything and be more efficient than if the workers were still on the line.
Sure, because it's still going to pay off for them. If they've got the contract with the union and they're obligated to pay these guys, it still may pay off if the technology is sufficient enough in creating productivity gains to pay them to do nothing. But this is the sort of inefficiency that obviously is really affecting this industry. And until they can go in there and restructure, it's not going to get fixed, and I'm not confident that simply propping them up with
right.
more dollars is not going to simply delay the necessary change that has to be made.
But this is going to be one of the conundrums that I think Obama is going to have. President-elect Obama is going to have is dealing with the UAW and the Big Three while simultaneously trying to pass the employee card check bill, the Employee No Choice Act. It should be called. Jim, let's move over and talk about the Supreme Court. What are your thoughts on where President-elect Obama's going to go with that?
Well, I think here you're going to get some predictable sort of left-leaning appointments, and it's not just on the Supreme Court. I mean, clearly, the Supreme Court justices most likely to step down are ones that are already held by folks who are on the left-leaning block.
Stevens and Bader Ginsburg are the two likely, right? Because of one's old and
pushing 90, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's had some cancer difficulties,
right.
are the two eldest and most likely to step down. Now, of course, renewing those as left-leaning appointments will have repercussions well into the future.
Right.
But it's really on the lower court.
It's not going to change. Yes, yeah, it's going to be on the lower courts that also are permanent assignments, by the way. Jim Copeland and I will be right back, folks. He's going to talk to us some more about this right after these messages.
Don't let your troubles make cry.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Jim Copeland with the Manhattan Institute. Jim, give us your website, please, and tell us how we can find you.
Well, the main Manhattan Institute website is www.manhattan-institute.org. But we've got two specific websites, triallawyersinc.com, that has a lot of our reports on the litigation industry, and then pointoflaw.com that's updated regularly, edited by my colleague Walter Olson.
Yeah, Walter's a good friend of ours, member of our brain trust.
Brings together really our brain trust. You talk about having a brain trust of folks that come on and talk with you. We've got really the best legal thinkers in the country that have thought about and written about litigation, and they all come together and write on a daily basis. Not all of them every day, but we bring them in periodically and have some good folks that write every day.
Does Walter still have his overlawyer.com website?
He also has overlawyer.com.
I love that. I love that at the title of that website.
We have actually discovered, we think, that certainly among any of the legal blogs that get any sort of volume or traffic. It's the oldest legal weblog in the country that's still in existence. So so we're pretty proud of that, and it gets a lot of folks visiting. It certainly gets some of the more outlandish cases that are out there of litigation abuse show up on Over Lawyered.
Walter does a good job, and of course Nicole Galinsky and a bunch of other folks from your group are on the show quite often. And that's manhattan-institute.com, is that right?
.org.
Yeah, manhattan-institute.org. So, folks, I encourage you to check that out. They do good work there, and find out what they have to do and support them if you think you can. Jim, let's get back to this appointing of judges by Obama, by President-elect Obama. As we said, the Supreme Court's probably not going to change a lot except to extend the he's probably going to introduce some liberal judges. If there are openings, I think there very well could be at least one, if not two, over the next 4 years. But that won't change the balance in the near term all that much. But the lower courts, that's where, because there still are many, aren't there many courts that are court positions that are still open that just haven't been ratified in the last 4 years?
Well, that's right. Really, in the last 2 years since the Democrats took over the Senate, they've held up essentially, if not all, a lot of the president's nominations, particularly in certain circuits. So, particularly in the Fourth Circuit, which really gets all these Pentagon cases because it's got Virginia in it,
yeah.
And in the D.C. Circuit that gets these administrative law types of cases really on all the government questions, they've held up appointments, and I would expect President Obama to move quickly to fill these with the Democratic Senate, signing them off with the potential of shifting the balance of power very quickly in those courts from a right-leaning to a left-leaning direction. And it's also worth noting that I think there will be an expansion of the number of judges, not at the Supreme Court. We're not going to have a court packing like FDR, but at the lower courts, there's been a hold-up on expanding judgeships in a lot of these circuits. There clearly is a demand for more federal judges in certain areas, and I think they're going to move quickly to do that, which will allow him to shift the balance of power in some of these circuits more quickly.
And these
than if
judges
he just waited for attrition.
Jim, these judges have more power than people realize, don't they? And they are life appointments as well, aren't they?
They're life appointments. Clearly, in what we think is an over-litigated society, there are so many areas where judges are making the law, and that's not merely a critique of judicial activism. It's also a critique of the way the laws are being written. They're being written broadly, and they're being written where often there are what are called private rights of action, where they're enforced through private litigation rather than through the Justice Department or through the government. So these judges in federal court have a lot of power, and the overwhelming majority of these cases never get to the Supreme Court. So these lower court judgeships are actually highly important. They're really the court of last resort for most types of litigation in the federal court.
So when it comes to some of the things that we expect President-elect Obama to do, and with regard to the judicial system, buckle your seatbelts and gird your loins.
I think that's right. If you look at his signed statements in the Senate as to why he opposed Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito's nomination, you see someone who says he wants more empathy from his judges than he's already got from these guys, empathy is a good thing, but I don't think the judicial
I don't think that word's in the Constitution.
Project really marries with empathy so much as
that word's not in the Constitution, is it, Jim? I don't think it is. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job today. We'll see you next time. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'll be right back after the news.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.